CliffCentral.com. Good morning. Friday, you made it to the weekend.
Woohoo!
Up you get, rise and shine. Let's go. Let's start the day. We've got plenty of things to get to. We've got some awesome guests on this morning. Oh, it's fantastic. And it's beautiful to be alive. Well, I mean, as long as you don't have a broken back or club foot or trench mouth or squint eyes or, you know, bad breath, rotten teeth, crooked left arm, whatever it is, let's get cracking. Oh. A little bit later on, it'll be Ben's turn to join us, as always on a Friday. And let us know what you're up to in the comments this morning. There's obviously a bunch of people already up and at them, and you can obviously join us. Also, the WhatsApp line, if you want to drop us a voice note, because those are definitely becoming a popular part of what we do here. And also on Friday, I get to play all of them. So if I haven't played any during the week, which irritates the producers, then I can get around to it today. All right, so weekend and some interesting plans. I'm actually having a very cool dinner tonight with some cool people. I'll be talking about that on Monday. I don't want to preempt it, but, you know, occasionally. We had a lot of birthdays this week, too. I'm celebrating one on Saturday. A friend of mine's boyfriend is having a birthday. And then last night we had a birthday for my sister's boyfriend, too. So there's lots of celebration happening. And this part of the year is kind of like that. If you've already had some sort of year-end function or whatever, then let us know about that too, because some of these are starting up again in earnest. And you know, they can come with all kinds of complications, right? I mean, you know, you're partying with people at work, you are seeing them getting drunk, doing stupid stuff. Maybe you've had an office party already to celebrate or just to acknowledge the fact that you made it through another pretty tough year. And some people are having none of those because things are still so tough that they just don't want to spend. I see a lot of companies are. And, you know, I've already shared the story of a few of those that I've been to in the last little while. Some of them are really cool. All of them really cool, actually. And I just love the fact that people are getting back to doing stuff, normal stuff, which is fine and interesting and cool. All right, so quick preview of what we will be doing through the course of this morning so that you can have some idea of what – I mean, it's also if you, you know, you want to skip 15 minutes – and wait till Ben joins us or something. You might want to do, I don't know. Some people don't want to listen to what I'm talking about. Some people want to get into that stuff. Glenn Biederman Pam is also coming in to join us at like 7:15. Really talented comedian, actor, and director. And he's just done a bunch of very clever ads. I saw he did one just the other day. It escapes me, and I'll remember by the time he's on later on which ad it is. But I watched this, and I thought, what a clever guy. Making some very boring brands very, very cool. Oh, okay, I recall it. I think it's for Checkers. I could be wrong, but there's this guy who's like trying to carry all the packets so he doesn't have to go back to the car. And they're all these brown paper bags and they all break at the door and all of his shit kind of runs out there. And it's the kind of thing that happens to all of us, right? So if you've ever tried to get everything out of the car at the same time, it sounds like such a silly thing, but I often try to do this. So you'll load this arm full and you'll carry some in your teeth. You'll carry others in your other. You'll put stuff under your arm. Then by the time you make it to the door, you realize you're not going to make it to the door. And then everything goes to shit in a handbasket, and it's not cool. I mean, that's the kind of thing he's doing at the moment. He's the director of that ad. Very, very clever. So a smart guy and a very funny guy. And we've had him on the show before. He also does a bunch of characters. And he was very prolific during lockdown, too, because he just put out some excellent stuff, including something that he did with Ben and Ben's business partner, who you've also met on the show before, Sharman, Mike Sharman. And it was that my creepy crawly, the creepy crawly my octopus teacher thing, which has actually just won a gold at the Creative Circle Awards. And he was in that. He wrote, directed, and starred in that too. So a very, very clever guy, and we're happy to have him on the show today. Always a good excuse to have someone like him on. You know, we try to also bring you, like, funny people who aren't going to depress you on a Friday. That's all you need. It's like to wake up and suddenly you go, oh, God, I could have done without this. Let that never be the case. So Ryan, who works on the show, who you've met a couple of times when he's been on the show, said to me, I've got to address this morning. There's something he's interested in. He's a massive, like, Elon Musk fan, in case you didn't hear that on the show the other day. He was on, I think, Tuesday. And he said, oh, you know, he's the biggest Elon Musk fan. And there are lots of people who are these fanboys and fangirls of Elon Musk's. And listen, he's the richest man in the world, so he's bound to attract a lot of positive and negative attention. But he has proper fans, despite the fact that he's not an entertainer. He's not a politician. He's not a sportsman. That's what's interesting, is that these guys, these tech billionaires, have become like a new class of celebrity. And only in the last 10 years, because there weren't really tech billionaires, maybe 15 years. There weren't tech billionaires before that. They didn't exist as a category. So it's quite cool to see, you know, people like that who are essentially in business. These would have been software engineering nerds not so long ago. Now they're the most popular and interesting people in the world. And I don't think anyone's going to doubt that this guy isn't clever. I mean, he's also audacious. And if you've seen, there's a brilliant documentary on him, again, the name of which escapes me, but it lays out the sort of risks and the sort of ups and downs that someone like Elon Musk, and there aren't a lot of people like him, so let's just say Elon Musk, that he's gone through. You know, the fact that he's risked it all, more than once, all of it. He's prepared to go back down to zero. Now, how many of us are prepared to do that? We may sit and criticize him. A lot of people don't like the fact that he's just taken over Twitter. They consider him a bad actor, that he has, you know, nefarious purposes, that he's trying to do damage to the public square that is Twitter. They see him as partisan. They see him as politically motivated. And all of that may or may not be true. We will see. We'll also see if he makes Twitter better or worse. My bet is that he will make it better, but there's no guarantee, because he is also a fallible human, and something like Twitter almost requires like a divine architecture. And I think a good engineer, a good software engineer, will say you don't want to involve humans in something like that. It should just be controlled by the algorithms. It shouldn't be manipulated by humans on the outside. Part of the criticism that's been leveled at Twitter is exactly that. Either way, the thing that Ryan wanted me to talk about wasn't how great Elon is, but why he gets all the heat that he's getting for dismissing so many staff members at Twitter, and it's caused huge consternation. Listen, the last companies to freeze hiring and to stop growing, to actively cut staff, have been these massive businesses. And it is surprising to me that Meta, which is Mark Zuckerberg's company, and which has been hiring and hiring and hiring and hiring, just basically putting people in offices for them to come up with great ideas, paying them a fortune. Some of them have just sat there for like 2 years, you know, using the bean bags or the sleeping pods or the coffee machine, or going to the canteen, or, you know, taking power naps or whatever it was, because we discussed how insane it is that these people basically did like 20 minutes of work a day, work in inverted commas being, oh, I'm going to come up with an idea and then we're going to ideate in some meeting. Meta has just laid off more than 11,000 employees. Now, whether or not that is as substantial a portion of people as the number that Elon Musk has laid off at Twitter is immaterial. It's 11,000 people laid off from Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. That's a 13% decrease in the workforce there. What makes that amazing is that unless you looked for the story, and this one is from the New York Times, it's not nearly as controversial as what is happening with Elon Musk at Twitter. And Ryan wants to know why. He said, you know, everybody's talking about how Elon Musk is laying off Twitter's workforce, but what about Zuckerberg at Meta? And that just goes to show you how there's like an unspoken double standard at these companies. There's stuff that happens. People go, oh, that's okay. Just kind of shrug their shoulders. Or the information never even reaches them because the media don't think it's worthy of publishing. And then someone like Elon Musk lays off people and they're like, oh, what a tyrant. Look at him ruining everything. He's going to make it all worse. What does he know? Really? Really? You know better than him? You're the one who can figure out that he should have kept all that like overweening, huge staff complement, unnecessary number of people. You reckon you would run it better and you'd keep those people? You who's not even in Twitter? Apparently there were two guys who posed as Twitter employees. They walked out of the office with a box of stuff and were immediately swarmed by the media. They pretended to be two, like, disgruntled, fired Twitter people. Turns out it was a big hoax. And they kind of did it just to prove to the media that there's a narrative. You know, there's a design in this, that these people who are, they're so desperate to hear a bad story about Elon and about Twitter, that this is what they do. That they will actually go out and look for a story that doesn't exist. It's stupid, but it proves exactly the point that I think Ryan is getting to, is that if you're Elon Musk, you're going to pick up a lot of heat. You're going to get a lot of noise. This is how biased the media is. We've seen this week with the coverage of the U.S. elections. We had a really interesting insight yesterday from Brooks Spector, who's firmly of the left. He's a fan of Democrat governments. He has made that clear during his time as a diplomat, after his time as a diplomat, which America has a strange system. You know, if you're the British High Commissioner to South Africa, you are actually appointed for a fixed term, and you're loyal to Britain rather than to the government in London, because the government could change hands. Sorry, that's exactly where it's different, is that the ambassador, I am getting mixed up here, but I was right in the beginning. The British High Commissioner gets recalled when there's a new government and gets put in, and they're then responsible to that government, whereas the U.S. ambassador has to be responsible to whoever the leader is, which is, you know, there's a difference there. Because, for example, when Donald Trump took over, he put in his own ambassador to South Africa. She was a South African-born woman who ran a handbag business, made a tremendous amount of money, and she was here as ambassador for a short while. And, you know, seemingly didn't ruffle all the feathers, but because she was Donald Trump's appointment, there were a lot of people whose noses were out of joint about her. And you can enter the diplomatic service. You can be in what they call the State Department, and you then serve whoever the president is. Whereas in Britain, as I understand it, and I'm open to correction on this one, you could only serve the government that appoints you in London if you're a high commissioner. So it works in two different ways, and there are many countries that do it the one way and other countries that do it the other way. I think, you know, we've had an interesting couple of situations here in South Africa where we've had appointments, like, for example, the Thabo Mbeki government, or it could even have been the Jacob Zuma administration, appointed Tony Leon, the former leader of the opposition, as an ambassador to Argentina for a while. And, you know, the same government put, for example, Nelson Mandela's daughter, Zenani, in as ambassador to South Korea, for example, at the same time. So you don't even have to necessarily be in the State Department, in American terms, our DIRCO, Department of International Relations and Cooperation. They'll appoint whoever. So it's interesting to just look at that. When a new broom comes in a corporation, they obviously sweep clean. You know, someone who's appointed as the CEO, the MD of a big business will immediately look at who else is in the executive suite, decide whether they can trust them and work with them or not, and then go about replacing the ones that they can't. And everybody who's ever worked in a corporation, and I haven't, has told me that it's really interesting to see how when the person at the top changes, everyone else in the company changes too. So This doesn't just happen at Twitter. It doesn't just happen at Facebook. It happens everywhere. They come in, they clean house, and then they go about either firing or hiring people as they need them. If you can't beat them, join them, says Paul Drake, then beat them. That is why Elon bought Twitter. Look, Twitter is tremendously valuable, even though on the balance sheet it's not as valuable as some of the other tech companies, because it controls so much of the news narrative. We did discuss this ad infinitum the other day. Anyway, what got me onto Brooke Spector is this whole media conversation about how, you know, we also had in the preceding 2 weeks the point of view of The Guardian's David Smith and of Breitbart's Joel Pollack, both who had a completely different take. These are two people who work in America at the highest level of the media and understand things in totally different ways. You can't say that isn't fascinating, because we're talking about the same thing, and yet within the space of 1 week and two different people, we had a completely different point of view. I think that's really interesting. Robbie says, the government shot is a F-dud and does fuck all. Here's to the fully vaccinated morons that trust government. Robbie, you've got a lot of anger issues for a Friday morning. Give yourself a break. I'm going to blow my nose and you think about what you've just said, because it's embarrassing and unnecessary on a Friday. Such anger. There we are. Now, I feel better, and hopefully you do too, Robbie. Sunelis says, hey, Rebel. George Meany is up saying couch critics. You see, George is also the CEO of a company. And it's very difficult to make these decisions. I mean, nobody wants to, and so many people had to, over the last 2 years, lay off workers. There are still people in society, usually they're not the people at the top of any corporation, who think that jobs are something that are provided by private enterprise when government can't provide them. And of course, there's no such thing as a jobs report where government have increased the number of people in the public sector that's good, because what that is a tax expense. It's a government expense. It's not a net good for the economy. It's a net cost rather than a net income. But a lot of people go around with this misgiving that it is the job of private business to give salaries to people in society. It's pretty stupid and insane, right? That's not what it's there for. That's not why anyone creates a business. People create a business for a number of reasons, but I guarantee you, unless you're an NGO that is only there to pay salaries, which makes you a pretty shitty NGO, this also came up in conversation this week, you don't just hire people to pay them a salary. I mean, that's what maybe you could argue that Twitter was doing with so many of these people that they didn't need. If you can lay off three quarters or two thirds even of your workforce and the business keeps going, you didn't need them in the first place. And obviously, COVID taught everybody you can do more with less, for efficiency reasons and for cost reasons. A lot of people, and listen, sometimes it was just convenient. Let's be frank about this. There are a lot of people who laid off staff during COVID and discovered, we didn't need them anyway. That was a really great excuse to get rid of some dead wood. It obviously hurts the people who've been laid off, but the fact is, if you don't know that you can be dispensed with, and then you are suddenly dispensed with, you weren't making yourself as useful as you might have been. And Kampamba says, when I started my middle management position, the first thing my boss said to me is, build your team. In other words, fire and hire who you trust. Correct. And this is what people, and that was a middle management position, Kampamba. So as you go up the ladder, you'll have to do more of that. Ultimately, building your team at the very top will be restructuring the whole business and hiring and firing a great many more people, which is why in South Africa, with employment law being so complicated, you know, the labor law is a whole, labor lawyers are a class of lawyers in this country. It's a huge industry. Just to know what the labor laws are, how often they change, and how regularly they're updated, how you work with unions, how you negotiate with the private sector, the public sector, how you can hire and fire people. It's much easier in a country like America. You try laying off three quarters of your workers in South Africa if you're a big corporation. You are asking, you know, bring in a team of consultants. There are going to be lawyers knocking on every door in the office. It's going to be well nigh impossible. So for him to be able to do this in America is a whole lot easier and less mercenary than you would think. In America, people get hired and fired all the time. You've seen in the movies how they literally walk out of the office with a box of stuff on the day they get fired. That's it. You clear your desk, you're out. In South Africa, you go on gardening leave for a few months. There's an investigation, and this is for the crooked ones, right, who you know you need to get rid of. For the good ones, I mean, the runway to get rid of someone, and I'd love to hear from business owners, is just, it's insane. It almost costs you less to keep a person who you've hired, depending on the contractual terms under which you've hired them, than it would cost to get rid of them, which is just crazy. That's the kind of it's a not even obvious and sensible way of handling things, but that's the sort of legislation and environment that we operate in South Africa. So, I mean, back to George again, who I said, you know, I like hearing from because he actually runs a business. He says employment and income is directly proportionate to the value you add to other people's lives. Well, that's exactly right. That's why people always print, the news media especially like this, because, you know, a lot of people in the news media are paid peanuts and they think they deserve a whole lot more. So when they see that some salary, I remember the most recent example that got people's feathers ruffled was, who's the guy who was put in charge of ShopRite Checkers? Basson? Something Basson. Can't remember his name now. He was paid by the board of ShopRite Checkers a huge amount of money because he's made it into a tremendously profitable business. Now, whether or not you're one of those people who uses their, you know, what is it, their 60-60 app or whatever it is, whether you're one of those people who goes to a store and buys things, whether or not you've seen an improvement in all of this stuff, you are contributing to their bottom line probably because of decisions that he made, right? So to carry on George's thinking here, he says, employment and income is directly proportionate to the value you add to other people's lives minus your own. Good point. He says, people and culture is a company's only sustainable competitive advantage. Everything can be copied except people dynamics. Again, a very fine point being made there. Chase says, maybe Elon should buy Eskom. He will get the inflated workforce situation sorted. Well, he couldn't, because he couldn't fire anyone in this country. It would be impossible for him to do that. There is no fixing Eskom. It's like we discussed on the Burning Platform with Pumi the other day. There is never going to be a situation in South Africa where we are actually able to... Whitey Basson, thank you very much, Pablo and George. There's never going to be a situation in South Africa where we can actually trim the public service down to what it should be. The public service has been hiring so many people and hiring them at the rate that is either equivalent to or better than what they would have been paid in the private sector, because we have this bizarre situation where you can't hire and fire people as easily, and where government has hired all the people they could to introduce, you know, again, they got rid of all the people they didn't like, which happens, and has created a whole class of people in the bureaucracy who cost us an enormous amount of money. Ah, there we go. Better. Could we get a labor expert on, because there's so much red tape? It's a very good question, Ruth, but it's so boring. I mean, I've tried to talk about this before on the show. It is so boring to listen to that you would pretty much stop after about 5 minutes. I mean, it's interesting from the point of view of what it does and how hard it makes everything in business and how much we could potentially get rid of. But if we actually get a labor expert in, I mean, my eyes just glass over and I start going, you know, oh, when I even hear these things. But if you want it that badly, I would be interested to hear. I really would. From you, not from them. And maybe we can find an interesting one. If you know an interesting labor lawyer, an interesting labor judge, that would be, that itself would be worth talking to that person for. So we got Ben on. We will talk to him in just a moment. We also got some news headlines we want to get through. So there's a whole bunch of that too. We're going to find out about the latest in the U.S. election results, which seem to have gone in a fairly predictable direction, despite all the news headlines telling you this was a disaster for the Republicans. I saw an interesting tweet yesterday on that matter, and then we'll go to Ben, because it's still very much on people's minds. a very good chance that the GOP is going to end up with a House majority. There's also going to be, you know, there'll be a few interesting personalities like Crane in the House, Vance in the Senate. J.D. Vance, by the way, a really interesting guy. You should look him up. Author of Hillbilly Elegy. By no means a stupid man, who has now just joined the Senate. And maybe we'll end all the stupidity of the Senate. I don't think he'll end it, but he'll certainly add value to it. Perhaps Masters in the Senate as well. Laxalt in the Senate too. Lake as governor, potentially in Arizona. Maybe even Kent in the House. And that isn't what a lot of people predicted, but by no means is it a failure, which was more or less the subject of discussion during yesterday's Burning Platform. It's worth keeping an open mind because these elections are still yet to be decided. I also see Barry Weiss in the New York Times. Sorry, she used to be for the New York Times. She now writes on Substack. Has written an article called 2022 Midterms, Voters Prefer Sanity. Trump's reverse Midas touch, the rise of DeSantis, abortion and the new culture war, and other takeaways from a surprising night in American politics. And she is a very, very interesting writer. So I think that's pretty cool. Also, she starts her article by referring to something from the New York Times, her previous employer. 5 ways to soothe election stress. I kid you not. This is a real thing. They actually published a real article. They want to be taken seriously. This is supposedly the most credible newsroom in America. The great New York Times, that so many people have held in such high esteem for more than 100 years, have written an article about 5 ways to soothe election stress. I mean, if that isn't the most ridiculous thing you've heard, because what they're doing is urging anxious Democrat readers to brace themselves for a widely predicted Republican surge. It's childish beyond belief. So I think that's all we'll fit in about the American elections this morning, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up. And Beth agrees with me that Barry Weiss is incredible, well worth following her Substack on the internet. You can actually subscribe to it, which is what I've got, and that's how I know that she's just written this article. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey, Gareth. Good.
I'm good.
I fell asleep for about 3 minutes there, but otherwise good.
Oh, right, because you don't care about the U.S. elections.
Well, look, people always find a way to fuck up their day, and I totally get that election stress thing because people are losing their minds about this stuff.
Yeah.
They're losing their minds about people who are really inconsequential to their lives, and they're only going to be disappointing. Get excited about your friends. Get excited about your family. Get excited about your pets. Not some dickhead who's about to run for office. I can't ever do anything in his life. That's why he's running for office.
You've provided me with a perfect excuse to get excited. So what are you excited about this Friday morning? And what are you excited about at this time of year, besides the obvious?
Oh, so much, Gareth, so much. But today I am driving to Hazy View into Kruger because
nice.
It's a family holiday.
Oh, you're going with your parents, or is it the whole family?
Well, my sister's never really part of the family vibe because she does her own thing. You know, she's kind of created her own tribe. So when we do family, it's predominantly just my brothers and my parents.
Oh, nice.
But my mom turns 70 today, now, the 11th of November. My dad turned 70 in March. So it's a big year for them. And yeah, we're going to go away, which is quite cool. You know, my middle brother immigrated came back a little bit. So I haven't seen him in a while. So yeah, it's just going to be, and then my other brother and his daughter. So it's going to be a proper family getaway. We're going now, coming back on next Friday. And it just reminds me so much about, you know, when you're a kid and you get excited about family trips.
I know.
Provided you got a nice family, obviously.
Okay, there are two provisos for this. Number one, you like your family, you get along with them. And number two, it's a holiday that you really want to go on, as opposed to, like, let's say they're forcing you to go on a religious study camp or training you for jihad or...
off to see grandma who wets the bed. You know, like your family's never perfect, right? No one's ever will be, and it's a good thing they're not. But I'm so incredibly fortunate when I look at my family I don't have that extended family, right? So I haven't got like dickhead cousins that I might not like. There's not like weird aunts or anything like that. It's just here.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, no one in my family wants me to owe them money, like lend them money or wants them to do things for them or look after their kids. Like it's just so low maintenance, which I absolutely love. But that's cool. So when we spend time together, it's like quality time.
You do acknowledge though that that's pure luck. I've got a similar situation. I don't have any first cousins. I mean, I've got some adopted first cousins, you know, people who are slightly more distant relatives that we've kind of brought in as first cousins and people I've grown up with. But mostly it's the nuclear family. We were all together last night for my sister's boyfriend's birthday, and that was very cool. He made this like chicken pie, which was fucking outstanding, actually. And it's nice to be around them. Like I actually enjoy their company, which is I'm very lucky. Most people dread this.
So lucky.
Most people dread this time of year. They're like, oh God, I got to spend, you know, Christmas with Aunt Mabel or with Uncle Siswe, who's like a perv, and they don't enjoy the prospect and a drunk, and they don't enjoy the prospect of that at all. And who can blame them? Because those people sound fucking terrible if they tell you about them. But it's nice to go on these family holidays, and that excitement of like waking up on the day that you're going on a break with people you really want to be with, it's fantastic. You can't beat that feeling.
Yeah, it is. I'm hugely lucky, and it's a really great feeling that I can just think about the going away and the catching up. You know, no one's like, oh, well, he's doing well now, so he must pay for this, or, you know, like expensive gifts over the holiday season. I mean, that's just tiring.
Oh.
So, yeah, we're going to do that. And, you know, like growing up in the Cape, a really big thing for us was like going to the garden route, because that was obviously the thing you did over school holidays.
Yeah.
And now as life has evolved and my brothers have moved up here, my parents absolutely love the Lowveld. So like the Lowveld's become like our new garden route, and there's certain places we go to and it's really cool. But then it made me think about like travel and how we kind of package travel nowadays. And ever since Instagram became such a big part of life, many people only consider travel to be this purchase, okay? This like consumer thing where you have to go to Paris, or it has to be this resort in Mauritius, or it has to be something that is like a big wow.
Instagrammable. It has to be something Instagrammable. I watched this I watched this series, a brilliant series, which I know it's old, so don't criticize me. Old by, you know, in terms of it didn't come out like this month or last month. It's called White Lotus. It's about this resort in Hawaii and these people. It's actually really, really funny and really clever. But there's this one point where this newlywed couple are at the resort and they're trying to make it romantic. The guy is trying to make it really special for his wife. So he wants to organize a little dinner, and he actually uses the word Instagrammable at some point. He's like, you know, can we do it somewhere really cute, really beautiful, really romantic, really lovely? And then he says, you know, somewhere that would look great on Instagram. And I felt like my soul leave my body for that second, because so many people just want to post an Instagram picture of where they are to prove it to people they don't even know who follow them on Instagram. And I don't want us to go down this rabbit hole, but we were just talking about how there are some people that you wish you could fire from a business, and that Elon is at Twitter. And I loved this comment from Yonder, who says, thank you, Ben. Those are weak people and wish we could fire them out of our lives as well. Well, the other thing you can't fire, not only in South Africa is it impossible to fire people who work for you and aren't doing their job, but you can't fire family. So to tie the two together, Instagrammable spots seem to be the priority. And also, you've got to get used to the people that you belong to as a family, even if you don't really like them. And you've got to grin and bear some of those relatives for a couple of days now around Christmas and New Year. Sorry, that's just how it's going to be. It's like the labor law won't let you fire them.
But yeah, this whole thing about Instagrammable travel, it puts travel out of reach for so many people, because when they think of travel, they think of this really expensive thing. Mm-hmm. But I think in that respect, they're missing the point of what travel actually really is. It's about getting away from you every single day. So over the next 7 days, I will definitely have Instagrammable moments. I mean, I'm going to the Kruger Park. That's amazing. But
that's cool.
One of the things I'm looking forward to is just that it's being around people that I used to live with, you know, being around people that I grew up with. And it's about having like the basic ordinariness of like a cup of tea together and a chat, or going on a walk, or that kind of stuff. And sometimes we just need to kind of remind ourselves that travel should be something that can be so basic. It doesn't always have to be 6 stars with perfect filters and sunsets and all that kind of shite. Just getting away, it's so good for your soul as well.
Right. Do you give a shit about Black Friday?
No.
But I'm
not in the absolute slightest, because I'm a massive fan of valuing your time in life. Mm-hmm. If you're going to spend hours online trying to save 15%, well, why don't you just pay full price and save 3 hours?
Right. Yeah.
If you value your time.
Time is more valuable than money. It should be to anyone.
Completely.
Even if you have no money or you have lots of money, your time should be more valuable. You can never replenish the time. You know, right now it's ticking and you've only got so many hours on earth. Some people have only a few, some people have many, but you don't know. So why waste any of it? Yonder just wants to throw this in because I disagree, G. I have banished and fired a few family members in the past 4 years, and they don't exist in my realm. Life is even better without them. Well, that's also, like, that's a good move. I'm not one to say turn your back on family and chase them away, but if they're not adding value to your life, you don't need to see them, right?
No, I totally agree with you on that. I'm full merit. When I talk about my family being nice, it's on merit. If they slip up, I'm still not going to see them.
So there's no loyalty there. It's all just down to merit. They have to keep adding value. Ah, Sean agrees with you.
And the thing is, and that's got to be the case, because then that's how you approach things as well. Yeah, I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah, no,
it's how it should be. We live in a world where you should be merit 24/7. I don't care what your last name is. If you're a prick, I don't want to hang out with you.
Spot on. At least you can say that you're an equal opportunity offender then, right?
All the time.
You apply the same rules to everyone. There are no special rules for family. You don't get a family discount.
Absolutely not. If anything, you should do better so you get scrutinized harder.
Right. Sean agrees with you. He says, Ben, you're right. We live in Bulgaria and coming back to South Africa in December just to spend time with family and friends. Well, that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. It's great if you go to the Maldives and you can stay in one of those huts, but also, fuck, it's boring after 2 or 3 days.
You just brought up something that I really wanted to discuss, and I forgot about it the other day, because people are planning holidays and people are talking about where they're going to go, if they can afford to, and what they want to do. And even if you just fantasize about it, it does make you feel a bit better. But I don't understand these people say they just want to get away and – I mean, obviously, there's a part of all of us that wants to go and, like, get away to that cabin in the woods and just see if we could be mentally strong enough to not have a signal, to not have other people around us, to try and live in total isolation for a little bit. It's a very magnetic and exciting prospect. But the reality is, I would go insane if I were on my own in the middle of nowhere for more than a week. And at a week, I'd be pushing it, too. I spoke to two friends of my parents. Look, they're a lot older than me. They're a lot older than most of us. But they like going to this place. It's some, like, beautiful, sort of undisturbed, natural part of South Africa where it's all very simple and straightforward, but there's nothing to do there. And
Oranje?
No. It's somewhere in Mpumalanga. So it's very pretty. And then, you know, they said that it's naturally beautiful. It's a very awe-inspiring and kind of grounding place. But they went there for 2 weeks. And these are not people who do activities. Okay. Understand. It's like they're at an age where you're not going to go and swing from a bridge or bungee jump or, you know, skydive or swim in the hot pools or anything exciting like that. This is just a pretty place where you live very simply. There is nothing fancy. You take your own food for 2 weeks. I think I'd get quite bored.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on the face of it, I think I would too. But this is another thing about travel. It teaches you about yourself. So maybe they've always wanted to do that. And it's like, oh, actually, I am this kind of person. But you'll never know unless you travel, right? You never know unless you go to these places. Like, I know I don't want to go to India because I feel like it's a toilet. But maybe travel to India will teach me something that I need to do. I still don't want to go. I still think it's a bit of a toilet. But,
well, these people...
It's just the greatest thing in travel.
Yeah, but these people have done this for the last 6 or 7 years in a row. Obviously, they love it. They wouldn't
keep... Closet nudists.
I don't... Maybe they're nudists. Maybe it's a nudist colony. Maybe that's the thrill.
They're obviously nudists.
Do we even have nudists in South Africa, like serious ones? Like colonies?
It's not very glamorous. It's not very glamorous. It's like caravan parks somewhere horrible. It's not like what you think.
Oh, that's not good.
I don't know how I know this, but yeah.
The prospect of that does not make me very happy or excited. I mean,
not at all.
No.
So, you know, Gareth, another thing about travel is like, you know, obviously I just mentioned the whole family dynamic, and that's cool, or it's terrible. But like travel is also like a social activity, right? So, you know, when you travel, you have traveled over the years with different kinds of people. What do you think makes the best kind of travel person? Like, is there sort of like a criteria that you think that people should look into? Because if you can get the right sort of experience, the right person, it's just even better.
I have said on the show, because I just went with her to Turkey, that my business partner, Rina, and I travel extremely well together, despite the fact that there's more than 20 years between us, or at least 20 years between us. We are, you know, we have a similar sense of humor about a lot of things. She is able to walk, you know, as fast and as far as I am. We have very divergent interests, but we find like it's quite cool to have each other to travel with, and that is despite the fact that neither of us are married. And people always think it's very weird that we would travel together, but a lot of our trips have been business, and we realized we enjoy those, so we like going to other places together. I've also been away.
That's
with
brilliant.
Yeah, and she and I get along really well. If we on the rare occasions don't want to see each other or do anything, then she'll do her thing and I'll do mine, or we just won't do anything on that day, and you know the other one will get on with whatever they want to do. So it's very like laissez-faire. But I also go away with family. I've done that a couple of times, proper family holidays like you're going on now. That's always cool because luckily again I get along with them, and we all kind of let each other do. If someone wants to have an afternoon nap, they have an afternoon nap. There's no like, you must follow this schedule of things that we're activities that we're all going to partake in. Right now, we're all going to go and play table tennis. Okay, for an hour and a half on the schedule, that's what we're going to do. I hate that kind of thing. Been away with friends. Some friends make better travel companions than others. I mean, you and I went to Sun City for two nights and 2 days. And most people would think that was the weirdest thing ever because we went on the rides like kids. That was the whole purpose of it.
Yeah.
We went on quad bikes.
That's great.
You know, we did all the things that you can do there. And we loved that. And that was really fun. And it was absolutely fantastic because we just laughed and talked shit and had a lot of things to do, physical activities to do that kind of kept us amused and entertained the whole time. So I think you've just got to find someone who is not a misery. My worst nightmare, and luckily it hasn't happened too many times in my life, I'm a fairly good judge of character, you know, when it comes to fun. You know, there's people who just pull everything down and make it all about them. They complain about everything, you know. I don't like the food here. Or, my room is too small. Or, I didn't like the way that person looked at me in the shop. And things are so expensive. Or, yeah, just complain the whole time. That is an awful, awful death sentence to a holiday. What do you think makes a good travel companion?
Well, I mean, like, there's two things in there. The common thread is someone who's not needy or demanding. You can do your own thing if need be.
Right.
It's not going to become a personal thing. You can just carry on. But that last part of what you said there, I find very interesting about travel. When people complain, what they're doing is they're comparing the experience to what they're used to, which goes against travel. You go travel because you want to experience new things. So yes, there'll be some untimely kind of inconveniences, like maybe your wait is a bit slow, or the food isn't quite what you thought it would be. But everything about travel is doing something different. So to complain about stuff when you're traveling is to basically complain about travel. It's just a very strange thing. And then to your point, you not only do that, but you make it uncomfortable for people around you. You've got to be open-minded. Like, we are so closed-minded with so much that we do nowadays because we are in our little ruts. So to go overseas and complain about stuff, or go on a trip and complain about stuff, you're more than just a misery. You're actually missing the point of travel.
So what makes for you a good travel companion? I think you just said that you know what you don't want in a travel companion. And by the way, it doesn't always work out that your romantic partner is the best travel companion. For many people, it does. Some people obviously have additional complications. We're talking as two single people who don't have kids. If you have children, there's a limit to what you can do. You know, you can't go and skydive with the kids when they're 4 years old. It's just not going to happen. So there are all kinds of things that you have to curtail. And obviously, you're within school holidays. There are certain places that are, inverted commas, child-friendly, which also complicates things a little bit. It's interesting that, you know, you and I have got this kind of broad range of categories that we can talk about. A lot of people can't for various reasons. Some people also have to schlep along the old grandmother, or they have to take someone along to look after the kids if they, you know, they want to spend time on their own. And all of this is makes it very limited. All of this the stuff we're discussing is just out of reach for some people.
It is, and that's why I just feel so privileged that I can sit here and be excited about something.
Yeah.
Which draws me to what I find the best thing a travel companion is: enthusiasm. Again, it's like when something comes up like this, you've really got to know that it's something cool. It's something to really cherish. It's not like, okay, well, it's that time of year, I'm going holiday now. You go through the motions. If you have someone that travels with you that's so enthusiastic about something, so they might do some research. You know, they look into what to do around certain areas, maybe look at the history of things. When you get someone who's enthusiastic, that's like the coolest thing, because, again, it goes back to what I was saying about when you're a kid and you get excited about this kind of stuff. When we do things in life that remind us of childhoodness, it's like the innocence, it's the excitement of it all, it's the purity of it all. So enthusiasm around travel is just the most endearing quality when it comes to having a travel companion, because it becomes infectious, right?
Yeah.
There's not going to be a perfect day every single day, but you have an enthusiasm towards certain things. It's every single trip that I've been on with someone that has been the thing that's really, really made it.
You just, again, to go back to the complaining, I think that's just the worst characteristic and quality in someone who you're stuck with for a long time. Because if you see someone complaining at a restaurant, but you only have to be there for lunch, it becomes almost amusing for you to watch them complain about everything. But if you have to travel with someone for, let's say, a week or more, and they're just miserable, That will ruin not only your holiday, but it'll probably ruin a whole lot of other people's holidays as well, because they're going to be moaning to and at somebody. And that's just awful.
Yeah.
Human Shield says, ideal travel partner is someone who will do the activities and the touristy shit with you, and who will let you do your own thing when you want to without being offended. That's huge.
Absolutely.
You know, some people also want to do everything together. They're like, you know, you get these couples who, like, they do everything together and they don't give each other any space at all. Sure, for that, you know, for people who are that similar, that's great. But for some people, that would be very, very suffocating. And I think the point of a holiday or a trip is that you want equal measures of new and interesting experiences on one side, and on the other side, relaxation. Because if it feels like a chore, you're going to come back more tired than when you left.
Absolutely. You know, all the things that we spoke about here aren't exactly difficult. So if you're in a family that is maybe not so great traveling-wise, maybe it's because someone complains a hell of a lot, and those kind of things just bring down the mood. So you've just heard this person complain at home every Tuesday because the power's just gone off. Now you're going to go somewhere and hear the same complaints, hear the same bullshit. It's like, well, what's the point of going away? And people can just be better like this. And before he knows, you have better holidays because you're just less of a fucking misery.
And that goes for life outside of travel, obviously, as well. Cunning Stunt says, that's why traveling with kids is so great. And this is a very good point. Everything is an adventure and their energy is cool to be around.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing more awesome than seeing someone else discover something for the first time, something that you've enjoyed. And you want to see them have the same level of enjoyment that you had. And obviously, people are all different. So the stuff that makes me excited on a holiday would not maybe make everyone excited. You know, I might be interested in some history shit that a kid couldn't care less about. But when you do see that excitement in their faces, my God, that feels nice.
Yeah. I was having a very similar chat with a friend of mine who's got two young boys, and he says that he's rediscovering things now because of them. Mm. And that in itself is like such a cool thing. Yeah. It's just, okay, you get so much enthusiasm for that.
It's pretty awesome. V says, I've traveled twice, never again. Fuck, what a mission. I don't know if he's being sarcastic, but that's another thing, right? Is that obviously, a lot of people find that the logistics and the organization around travel is exhausting. And it can be. I mean, like airports and hiring cars and hotel bookings and or camping, if that's the thing you're into. A lot of people love camping. Cooking, all of that stuff can be really, you need a proper logistics expert sometimes to make these things work, especially if it's a big family or a big crowd of people. You need someone who knows what they're doing.
But don't you also find that if you really love the trip, almost like the best part is like the eve of. So you get the packing, you wrap up all the things of your everyday life. And, you know, when you get to the airport and you have your first drink before your flight, and there's that sort of like special time. Again, it goes back to like when you first started traveling and there was a newness to it, a novelty to it. Uh-huh. That to me is almost like the best part, because you guarantee that the excitement's going to just overrun anything that could trip you up, like a long queue or a snotty person at the passage, a passport control, whatever. You're going somewhere, so your expectations are so, like, huge.
Yeah, but it's also like that for me with Christmas and everything else, and I think it comes from, like, as a kid, I used to get so excited about things that in my own head, I built them up, and they were never going to live up to my own expectations. But I wasn't even sad afterwards. I was just really, really excited before. It's like being manic without being depressive. You know, it's a personality attribute for me. And it's a plus. I love getting excited about stuff. It's like,
exactly. It's kind of like dating, I think. You get excited of the idea of it, and it's just dreadful. And you
well, I mean, that's again, different personalities, right? The people who are excited about something before it happens, even if it doesn't live up to their expectations, are usually happy people. The people who approach everything expecting it to be okay, and then when it ends up great, are always thrilled, but they obviously have bad intentions before the fact. And then there are those people who they just assume everything will be worse, and usually it is. And then they come out of everything going, oh, that wasn't as good as I thought it would be.
I knew it would be this.
I knew it would be horrible. I just knew. I knew that that food would be shit. I knew that that plane would be uncomfortable. I knew that that hotel was going to be horrible and dirty. I just knew, and I knew that we wouldn't have a good conversation at supper. I know something about you. I know you're not going to be fun to be around ever again. Last time, motherfucker. We won't
and that's
be fooled
why we
again.
We should be able to then cancel family members. If you got anyone in your family who is just like that, and there are plenty, you have every right to never spend time with them.
Right. Make this the holiday where you decide that. Shani says, on holiday trips, I irritate people because I become too exuberant. No. I love excited people. I'd rather have that than moping, you know, moping sad.
And I absolutely believe her because she wrote that all in caps.
Yeah, Shani, we know. We get you. Okay. Cabello says, morning, brethren. But then Sibanda says, I got kicked out of a nude beach in Perth. First of all, what are there, like, nude offices in a nude beach? Are there nude managers that manage the nudists?
Well, Sibanda said, guess what? I'm just going for two bigger schlong. Obviously scared the crap out of the Australians.
Well, everybody's asking now. Yonder says, is it for not being nude? But we're going to find out, because we're not going to leave it at that. You better answer the question. So, Sibanda, we want to know, why were you kicked off a nude beach in Perth? And also,
Because it wasn't actually a nude beach. Maybe that's the answer right there.
Wouldn't it be funny, though, if there were, like, the nude police, that because they follow, like, nudist colony rules, that there are a whole lot of things that need enforcement. Like, for example, you are allowed to lie in this area. You're not allowed to lie in that area. You are allowed to be with your wife or husband, but you're not allowed to be with someone else's wife or husband. There must be rules. But obviously the nudists themselves know it. I just want to know if there would ever be management in a place like that who'd come over and go, excuse me, sir.
Absolutely.
We've noticed that you are attempting to wear clothing, or that you have you've been aroused by someone else's wife, we're chasing you off the beach. How does it actually work? And if it did happen, how would something like that occur?
Yeah, it'd be really funny. Like, you forget to take off your shirt and someone just starts blowing a whistle. Hey, you, take it off. Take it off.
Yeah, they run over to you and start like, we're going to arrest you. And like, what are the repercussions? They only really have one thing. There's only one punishment, and that's you have to leave. Which might not be the worst thing, considering the quality of most people at such places. Maybe Sibanda's gone quiet, by the way. We don't have an answer now. So thanks very much for leading us down the garden path.
I genuinely believe that Sibanda went to is Perth, right? It's a very conservative place, mostly full of South Africans who just wanted to leave.
Right.
They don't have I'm going to guess they don't have nudist beaches. And he just decided that this is going to be a nudist beach.
All right. Well, if you don't answer, we're just going to make up our own answers, and they'll always be more interesting than the real story. David John says maybe there are rules about being overweight and nude. There should be. Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, you should earn the right to go nude.
Oh, okay. Sibanda's kind of answering the question. Ben, you were right. It's me, a.k.a. Mr. Big Balls. Okay, right. So it's because he's just enormous and frightened the Australians. That's probably what it is. I would love to carry that discussion on, obviously, because it's fascinating and we haven't minded enough. But we've got to take a break. We will be back with some more. We've also got Glenn Biederman and Pam joining us in a short while. You and Mike Sharman have worked with this guy. He's really funny. He's really clever. He's really cool. He will be joining us.
He's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, so he's
absolutely amazing. I think Mike's actually got a crush on him. I don't really work with Glenn. Some more on Mike's side of the business. I think if Mike had to turn, I think he would co-opt into Glenn.
He would, or if Glenn had to turn, he would take Mike with him.
Well, you can ask him that question. I don't know what it's like on that side. I just know from Mike's side.
We'll ask him just now. He'll be joining us. And Ben will be with us until 7:30. Stick around, cliffcentral.com. Friday morning, the weekend is here. Yay. cliffcentral.com